Things I've given up trying to understand. Rattling around in the back of my mind, organized into two categories, are lists of things that I just don't understand. One list consists of diverse items that I've accepted as enduring mysteries beyond my comprehension. Electricity, for example. Can't seem to understand it, but that doesn't stop me from turning the lights on and off. Raw carrots are also on this list, specifically why I always get the hiccups when I eat them. Then there is the issue of my chocolate chip cookies and why they come out differently every time. Sometimes they are beautifully fluffy. Other times they are thin wafers, which can have their own crispy charm, unless, like last night, I have to pry them off the cookie sheet like a scab. I've always wondered why Citizen Kane is supposed to be the best movie of all time. I saw it once in high school and thought it was a dreary bore, but then was unnerved by the thought that I was probably just too unsophisticated to appreciate its symbolism, an intimidating concept in and of itself. What does it really mean when Kane walks through a hall of mirrors? Is this supposed to be a comment on perception versus reality, or something more subtle that is really over my head? Last weekend, I rented the movie to give it one more try, and I even printed off a sheet listing the attributes of this classic. We watched it as a family, and while we remained patient during the first hour, we realized that the plotline was never going to take off, and we all started multitasking with iPads. So without any shame or remorse, I have now placed Citizen Kane on the list of things that I've given up trying to understand. My second list includes things that I would like to understand at some point in my life, if I ever got around to it. Last year, I successfully pried two topics off that list, understanding why you cannot divide by zero, and why you get a positive number when you multiply two negative numbers together. These two topics were easily accessible. After all, they were the basis of elementary school math. Now I thought I would take a crack at a more formidable topic, the enduring mystery of why you don't age in space, aka Einstein's theory of relativity. When I first heard of this bizarre conundrum in high school, I immediately gave up any hope of understanding it. First of all, this was a physics issue, and even worse, it was a rocket science issue, and I knew from an early age that I was never going to be a rocket scientist. I have never been comfortable with abstract topics, see symbolism above. And aside from using an electrical current to mysteriously magnetize a screwdriver, my exposure to physics has primarily consisted of all those bizarre thought experiments that have no real-world relevance. I distinctly remember one example from college physics. We were asked how we would cross a lake if we were stranded in the middle on a frictionless piece of ice. My short answer was, "I don't really care because it will never happen." I barely survived the one-year physics course that I had to take as a prerequisite for medical school. But now, 30 years later, I'm ready to give it another try. I figure if I'm going to understand anything about physics, I might as well tackle Einstein's splashiest theory of relativity. The classic example describes two identical twins, one of whom is an astronaut and heads off to Mars in a spaceship and is gone for many years. When he last returns and steps out of the spaceship, he is astonished to see his gray-haired twin walking with a cane, while he looks fresh as a daisy. The story seemed just so bizarre. After all, shouldn't time be the one constant that we can rely on? A second should be a second everywhere, and if the two twins synchronized their incredibly accurate watches just as the rocket ship departed, why should they be so predictably off-kilter when the rocket returns? The theory of relativity is considered the hairiest of all physics problems, so I knew that I had to clearly state my objectives to avoid any mission creep. For example, I don't need to understand relativity so well that I can explain it to someone else. Grokking it is not a goal. Basically, all I want to do is grasp the concept once, and even if it is only for a few seconds, that would be enough. My first stop was Tom Coleman, my go-to guy for any questions involving math. His credentials are impeccable, a real numbers theory guy, both a physicist and an economist, whose special gift is his ability to simplify even the most complex topics. When I told him that I was trying to understand the theory of relativity, he said, "You know, people say that there are only three people who truly understand this, and two of them are dead." I reassured him that I was confident that I was talking with the sole survivor, and off we went. But even Tom found it tough going. We immediately plunged into one of those contrived thought exercises. Tom asked me to consider a pole vaulter carrying a pole that was twice as long as a storage barn. Then I was supposed to imagine that I was standing at the side of a road watching the pole vaulter run toward the barn, and in fact, this exceptional human being could run almost at the speed of light. According to Tom, just as he enters the barn, the pole would appear shortened compared to the stationary barn, and in fact, it would fit in perfectly. The explanation had something to do with the time it took for the light to travel the distance of the pole to me as a bystander at the same time the runner was speeding along. Clearly, this concept was a little too complex to explain over the phone, and I said, "Tom, I suppose this is a bit like religion. You just have to have faith in things that are beyond comprehension." No, this is completely different than faith and religion," said Tom, "because you see, the basis of science is reproducibility, and scientists will immediately try to confirm or disprove someone else's work. The consequences of the theory of relativity have been directly observed many times using such things as subatomic particles. It's just difficult to explain." Tom then recommended that I read the book, "Mr. Tompkins Takes a Vacation." I knew from the tone in Tom's voice that he was recommending a children's book, which sounded like a cross between Thomas the Tank and a physics textbook. "Okay, Tom," I said, "how old were you when you read this book?" Tom sheepishly admitted that he was a kid, but then added that he had reread it since then and it was one of his favorites. I decided that a children's book on physics might be just the ticket. Mr. Tompkins is a mild-mannered bank clerk whose vacation is really a dream world that serves to illustrate the principles of physics. In the introduction, the author notes that our entire frame of reference is based on our five senses. Basically, what we see, feel, hear, etc., is what we get. He encourages us to consider that our concept of time is really arbitrary. Our assumption that a second is always a second is really just our invention to make sense of the world. And it works beautifully most of the time, but not if we're moving really fast, i.e. in a spaceship approaching the speed of light. In the next chapter, we are introduced to Mr. Tompkins, whose idea of a relaxing afternoon is to attend a physics lecture, but he promptly falls asleep and enters a world where the speed of light has been drastically reduced so that everyday events are subject to the theory of relativity. A passing bicyclist is shortened, much like Tom's pole vaulter entering a barn, and a very young-looking passenger gets off a speeding train to greet his elderly granddaughter, similar to the astronaut twin who has aged very slowly in space. This chapter included several quaint pen-and-ink drawings of distorted people and unsynchronized clocks, and even though I could appreciate the consequences of the theory of relativity, the whys remained mysterious. And then the aha moment. Mr. Tompkins learns the basic principle that underlies it all. Nothing can go faster than the speed of light. Now here I describe one of those annoying physics thought exercises, but this one actually works. Recall when you were last at the airport on one of those moving walkways, and since you are impatient, you increase your pace even more by walking briskly. You look to your right beyond the walkway, and it looks like you are just whizzing by the stationary traveler who has stopped to use her cell phone. Are you with me so far? The concept is easy and familiar. Basically, your speed is the sum of the moving walkway plus your walking speed. Now let's take this concept and speed it up. The walkway is now moving close to the speed of light, and additionally, you are walking really fast such that the sum of the two speeds would exceed the speed of light. But that can't happen because the speed of light is a constant. So something has to give, and it is time. Time slows down for the person on the walkway compared to the stationary traveler. It's real, it happens, it's not just an illusion, and it is called time dilation. As that twin is hurtling through outer space, time has dilated relative to his earthbound counterpart. He ages more slowly, but he would be completely unaware of it until he got off the spaceship and saw his decrepit twin. Mr. Tompkins valiantly tries to explain just why time slows down, and there are several more pen and ink drawings and a few complicated-looking equations, but I didn't need to go any further. I felt that I had successfully thought outside the confining box of my five senses just long enough to understand the basics of the theory. Of course, I know that I have grossly oversimplified the issue, and I actually might be partially or totally wrong. However, the moving walkway is the scenario that makes sense to me, and I'm going to stick with it. In fact, I have just triumphantly crossed the theory of relativity off my list of things that I have given up trying to understand. The theory also describes funky observations about space and mass, but conveniently, I've defined anything beyond time as mission creep. Basically, I'm willing to put my faith in rocket scientists and subnuclear physicists to sweat the details on this one.